Awesome. So thanks so much for letting me interview you for Real Black Grandmothers.
Thank you. Thank you for asking.
So tell us your name and where you are located.
My name is Angela Aldridge, and I am located in New York by way of North Carolina.
Sweet, sweet. So born and raised in North Carolina?
Born and raised my whole life in North Carolina. I've only been in New York for 3 weeks now. So definitely born in the country, raised in the country, farm,
wow.
Farmland, mountains.
Wow, that's amazing. So congratulations on the move to New York.
Thank you. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about you. What do you do for a living? You know, the typical sort of background question. Give us a little background on who you are and what you're up to.
Well, I am first an artist, a musician. I am exploring that more and more every day. I feel that I am a healer. I have, you know, just different, you know, I like to say that I bring people together. I have worked in, you know, different sectors in mental, physical, and spiritual health realms. Went to college, lived in North Carolina, went to college also in North Carolina, first-generation college student, and worked in my field of sports medicine for 14 years and decided to get into mental health for the last 15 years. And in that whole process, moved from a very religious Southern Baptist background over into a more metaphysical, spiritual awakening. And just enjoy, no matter the job, no matter what I'm doing, just enjoy heart-to-heart relationships and heart-to-heart communications and connections with people. So that's basically just me. Pretty humble and just, you know, a people person. So that's basically it. What I'm doing right now is I am on my vision quest in New York. I am unfolding. I am letting go of layers that I no longer need, that no longer serve me, and I am opening up and expanding into who I am called to be. So that's truly where I am at this point. So I'm very excited, and I'm listening. I'm doing a lot of listening right now and working on being still. So.
Sounds like you are in an incredibly powerful place at this moment in your life.
Incredibly powerful. Yes, it is. It is. I am also calling a lot on my ancestors, a lot on my guides to help me right now, a lot on my inner voice and inner spirit for their guide, their guidance, their protection. For my direction right now and how I can be more grounded in my purpose and how I can serve more for my purpose. It is a very powerful place. I'm grateful to be here. There are a lot, I think I'm faced with a lot more unknowns than I've ever been faced with before. So at times, you know, it can be a little scary, but to know who stands with me and to remember that and to revisit those relationships and what I'm doing right now and this being able to talk about my great-grandmother, that's very powerful for me. So I welcome it, and I'm so honored. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And so there are sort of three sort of parallel lines, but I'll start with one parallel line that you mentioned as sort of your earlier influences around growing up Southern country Baptist and then moving into a much more metaphysical realm and the role of your ancestors, both thinking about how they shaped you growing up, but also how they're also kind of holding you down now. So even in both of those lines, I said I was going to say one, but I'm saying two. In both of those lines of like earlier influences into where you are now, and then the role of your ancestors in holding you down then and now, what role did your grandma or grandmothers play in both of those?
Well, my great-grandmother, she's the matriarch of our family and the root of everything for my family. So being, you know, being in the Southern Baptist Church and being a part of it, participating in the church and bringing your time, treasure, and talent to the church, is following her lead was something that was a must. And being, you know, just having a respect for an outside God, was what my great grandmother like really instilled, like the fact that we don't wake ourselves up in the morning, and that we are provided, you know, we are provided for at all times. And I'm grateful for the reference and the foundation of and the constant scripture, the constant song, the richness of teaching me my culture through that avenue of the Southern Baptist Church. I'm so grateful for because that was center for her. That was everything for her. It was centered around the church, like everything was about, you know, when we would go to church and what we would be doing in church. Everything, every single day was it was linked to the church. And what's interesting is you know, as I've gotten older, knowing that as I've evolved more into an understanding that spirit is within, just as spirit is everywhere, but is within, and I am also a co-creator with spirit. Being able to recognize a power that I share with God, in the image of God, and to be able to recognize and understand that my great grandmother, although she isn't here in the physical, her energy and her spirit is still forever with me. And forever alive. And so just being able to go back to that and to know that, and then to think about her grandmother and her great grandmother, you know, and the richness of a culture that is very powerful reminds me every day of my power and who's with me, and that helps a lot when I'm stuck, and that helps a lot when I'm fearful and when you know, I'm going through. So seeing my great grandmother right now as an ancestor that is with me is it's everything. It's everything.
Wow. You know, I love it. I love the clarity that you have around how we carry them, how you carry her. You know, we spoke earlier, and part of my creating this archive is that we carry them and you carry her, but I want the world to acknowledge and carry them in a way that hasn't been done before, particularly for Black women, Black elder women. And I love to hear you talk more about, first of all, the archive is about saying their names. You know, so what is your great-grandmother's name?
Willie Mae Crank.
Willie Mae Crank.
Willie Mae Crank. Yes, and we called her Big Mama.
Big Mama. So what, yes. Spell her last name?
C-R-A-N-K.
Okay, Crank. It is Crank. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Willie Mae Crank, Big Mama. Tell us about her. Who was she? Like,
I had the joy of knowing my great grandmother, Big Mama, until I was 16, like just having her as part of everyday, pretty much everyday life. And she was about 4'11", you know, and a silent. She was a silent lady, very strong, very, very much a powerful presence, but silent a lot. So occasionally when I think of my great-grandmother, I think of being 16 and the interaction that I had with her and being around her. I wish that, knowing what I know now, I wish that I had asked more stories and for more stories and asked for more songs and, you know, just interacted more than what I did. I remember once asking, so therefore the factual information around her birth and, you know, her life and how she moved to North Carolina, and I think it's from South Carolina, I don't really know all the details on that. I remember once asking her if she was a slave, and she laughed at me. She laughed, and to get my great grandma to laugh, it was a big deal, because like her whole body shook, you know, when she laughed and everything, and it just made you feel like you just opened up the whole universe. And I remember thinking, well, maybe I...
The phone, whatever you just did.
Okay. All right, how's that?
But yeah, good.
Yeah, I remember, I remember thinking, you know, maybe it's a bad thing, and maybe I shouldn't have asked, and maybe, you know, she did tell me no, that she wasn't a slave. But what I did hear later was that they sharecropped, and from that they did end up owning, you know, many acres of land in Cleveland County, North Carolina. So, but yeah, I just remember that. I wish I had asked more questions after that, but just to see her laugh, that kind of threw me off, and the fact that she was like, no, I wasn't a slave, you know. But, you know, to me, you know, I just... something I needed to know as a kid. I don't even know why, but Big Mama, she ran things. Life, our family life centered around her table. She was a very strong presence in her neighborhood, very respected and looked up to. When I came along, before I was born, her husband had passed away, and he was Big Daddy. He was referred to as Big Daddy. And he ended up getting pneumonia from working in the fields. They raised my mother. They had Grandma Katie, and Grandma Katie, I don't know the story there, but she was my mom's mom, Big Mama's daughter, and when she had my mother, she moved to D.C. So I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with Grandma Katie. But once again, our family was very close with Big Mama. And so it was a life. Once again, she was on a farm. They had a farm, and they had a huge, like, vegetable garden. And so my childhood was running behind the tractor. Her son, she calls son, his name was Isaac Crank, and he was one of her children who lived with her until he passed away. He never married, and he just ran the house. He ran the land, and so Uncle Son, as we refer to him, would drive the tractor, and we would run behind the tractor picking up potatoes or, you know, gathering the corn or whatever it was in season. But I remember a time where we could just pick the tomatoes off the vine and just eat them. Like you should wipe them off on our shirt and just eat them. This was the first time, and I didn't know this until I got older, but she actually had an edible garden. Like every
there were so many trees in her garden and on her land that we actually ate from, and we also preserved. So Big Mama had an 11-room house, and she had a underground cellar that we would run down. We would preserve the muscadines from the trees, and we would gather the pears and the peaches and the apples, and we would actually make preserves and can, you know, with the mason jars. We would can the corn and tomatoes and things from the garden and the okra. And so I remember sitting on the porch a lot, and we would do the, you know, of course, we were the labor. So we did the shucking corn and the pea shucking and everything else. And so they would cook them and heat them to temperature and get the jars ready. And we would label the jars, and we would run around to the cellar and place them on the shelf. We did a lot of that. There was a lot of in doing so, we got the stories. You know, we got to talk to Big Mama, and she was very much work mode. She was that was her. She was so much a planner, and she lived on the land. She lived off the land. She lived by the moon cycle, and so everything in the house that was ever done was by, whether it's pulling your teeth or having a child or whatever, everything was by a moon cycle. So I just remember Big Mama being silent, and you always watched her to see what she was doing, and you just wanted to imitate it. You just wanted to go where she was going, do what she was doing. Like, even as kids, we wanted to do that. So she was, like I said, she's very much a planner, and she would prepare in advance. So we were taught to prepare things in advance. She had hogs and chickens, and it was nothing for Uncle Son to kill a chicken, and we plucked the chicken, and she fried the chicken, you know. So that was pretty much the upbringing. My great-grandmother also, I remember her checking me a lot and checking the kids a lot about saving and conserving and catching the water that would roll off the tin roof. Like she had these big barrels and buckets around her house that she always wanted us to save the water and to water the flowers with that and to save that in case we needed it. We also did laundry outside with a big black pot under a fire with the fire underneath and the lye soap and with the big stick and swirling around the blankets and that kind of thing and I get excited talking about it, but like I said, she was very much a worker, and she just worked on the land, and just, you know, every now and then you were just really blessed to have a personal story about her childhood or to catch her humming a song or to catch her singing a song. And, you know, when she did speak to you, it was a story about how to live and how to treat other people. She had, even though she was older, just the way she respected other elders in the community that weren't even as old as she was, you know, just the respect that she taught us to have for them. And it was always run this up to such and such's house, you know, take this up to such and such's house. And it, you know, some vegetables or something that they may need. But, you know, it was, it was a beautiful relationship that I had with her, because now I look back and I see that everything for her was like a meditation, like everything, no matter what she was doing, she was in constant meditation, and it was so purposeful, even when she prepared her same breakfast every morning,
which was
eggs and some sausage, toast, and grits, and she always had to have a coffee and her water, and an orange drink. So it wasn't orange juice. It was just the regular old orange drink, you know, orange juice, but it really was an orange juice. So she had to have those three, and occasionally she would have a tea with that, but those three or four drinks every morning, you know, drink out of the same cups and the, you know, sat in the same seat. Like, we knew going into the house, like, it's the same seat. It was clockwork. The house ran by clockwork. We were lucky to watch television. So after chores and being outside and cutting wood and stacking wood and taking care of the land, we would come in and during dinner we would have time to watch television. And that was probably like a 30-minute show or maybe an hour show. But after that, my uncle's son would get up, and we already knew when he would grab his boots and he would have his plate in his hand, he was gone. Like, he would hit the TV, and you don't turn the TV back on. Like, that was it. TV time was over. So we got maybe 30 minutes to an hour at the most a day at her place. So, yeah. So, and then Big Mama would start preparing for bed. And we're like 6 and 7 in the evening, you know. And so we're in bed at dark, and we rose by the rooster. He rose by the rooster, and it's so funny because I'm just remembering this. So rooster says cock-a-doodle-doo, right?
Right.
And so we used to say that the rooster was saying. This is so corny, but the rooster was saying, "Oh, Big Mama," like the way it said it wasn't cock-a-doodle-doo, it was "Oh, Big Mama," because we would listen for that, because that would be the time that we would, you know, we would get up and start the day over again. But, you know, like we were corrected throughout the day. She didn't like the females wearing pants, so she, you know, she didn't harp on it, you know. She just felt like she wore a dress every day. She felt like we should be in dresses. My great-grandmother never left the house except for Saturday and Sunday. And Saturday was going to town. We would go to town. She would go to her same stops. She would go to the grocery store, to the Goodwill and the Salvation Army. And she would go to the pharmacy, and she would go to the meat market. And she would go to the bread store, the bakery. And we were in Salvation Army and Goodwill, she would get her undergarment for church. So she would get her slips, and she would always know when she would have to wear a white dress or whatever occasion was going on at church. So every week she would buy herself something new from Salvation Army and Goodwill for church the next day.
Mm.
And that was basically our highlight, was looking forward to going to town. We called it town. So we would go to town with her on Saturdays and church with her on Sundays and back to work Monday through Friday. But, you know, just being around her, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Just listening to, I remember sitting, we all pretty much lived out of one room in her huge house, and around a wood-burning stove. And especially, like, you know, when it would storm, you know, of course we'd have to shut everything down, turn off all the lights, and sit and listen to God work. So that, you know, we definitely grew up where we couldn't make a lot of noise. And because she was so quiet, she didn't tolerate a lot of noise anyway. You know, you never wanted to be loud around her because you never knew when she was going to say something. So she taught me basically how to live off the land and to prepare in advance for whatever may come up, but be prepared and to just move in meditation. Move in meditation.
Wow. You just, Big Mama sounds amazing. Sounds absolutely amazing. Like, how fortunate, right?
Truly, I was grateful, you know, and you know, we had our, our conversations about why we needed to come in before the street light came on, you know, because it was getting dark. And that was pretty much, by the time the street light came on, it was already bedtime. So we had to come in before and you know, go through our dinner and get our 30 minutes of TV in and start preparing for bedtime. So, you know, there were times when it wasn't always what we wanted, but what were we going to do?
Right.
What were we going to do?
So how many kids does she have? Do you know?
I don't know. I do know there's double digits.
Okay.
I do know that. Mm-hmm.
And she raised
I'm sorry?
And she raised your mom.
She raised my mom, yes.
Wow.
Yes. I know that her kids, they had many acres of land, and her children received, they grew up on an acre, and so they grew up on their own land with their own house. And so my mother, you know, was basically like her child. So she, you know, she took care of her just like her child. So, you know, she was our great-grandmother, but she was our grandmother, you know. Like I said, I really didn't know the richness of what we had until, you know, later on in life. And I look back and I thought, wow, I knew my great-grandmother until I was 16, you know, like how fortunate, you know.
Right.
But yeah, all, you know, just messages of loving other people. And I remember, you know, that story that I wrote about, you know, in conversation with her one day, and, you know, talking to her about the God that I was being taught in church, and just how God seems like this bad person, this big bad person, you know, and a mean God. And, you know, talking about how I was asking her about how God's just going to destroy everybody, destroy the world. And she just chuckled. And she said, honey, God's not going to destroy the world. Man is going to destroy man. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that and thinking, I almost wish it was God. You know, because, man, there was so much going on with people, and I thought about how people are, that I didn't want to be destroyed by people and their fickleness and their emotions and everything man has going on. I almost wished it was a guy to destroy, but she was like, I was shocked because I would have thought that she would, you know, being so much in the church, that she would take that approach, you know, of the hellfire and damnation God that I was being taught, that she would take that approach of you know, how God was going to do this. But she was like, no, man will destroy man.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, wow, that's very scary. That's very terrifying, actually. So I'll never forget that. But constant love for people. She was one of those people, she moved very slowly. She walked very slowly. It took her a long time to get from point A to point B. And she was one of those people, she would lean on everything that she walked by. So when we were in town, somebody has a nice car or something that she needed to walk by, she wouldn't have a problem leaning on it and taking her time to walk by. And, you know, people, you know, no matter who they were, they just respected that. And so people would ask, well, you know, because she was a regular, how you doing, Miss Crank? And she would not hesitate to stop and look you in your eyes and tell you every ache and pain and to tell you how she felt about the day, how she slept. She would tell you everything about how she was feeling. And I learned to look at people as they were looking at their watches and thinking, I would think, don't want to know, don't ask. Because we already knew it was gonna be at least an hour. You know, we already knew that. But to watch the look on people's faces as they try to get out of that, because, you know, you don't want to interrupt her, you know. And I would say to them, You didn't want to know, you shouldn't ask.
She's authentic and honest about what she does.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. She will let you know. But, she, you know, she would also let you know just how important it is to love everybody. You know, just love everybody. Love people. Love through it. Love through it.
Mm.
You know, that was truly what she preached was loving and helping. You know, help where you can, serve where you can, give where you can, and love.
Mm.
So she was. What I also, looking back, what I also appreciated is how she cared for the community and how she cared for the people in the community. So even now I have such a warm spot for elderly around me,
mm-hmm.
and getting there, making sure they're okay. And I know even growing up, my brothers, you know, my mom taught us that as well. My brother, she would send my brother up with the clippers and say, go cut, you know, such and such hair for church tomorrow, or go see mm-hmm. if such and such needs anything for church tomorrow, or, you know, if anybody, you know, if I drive up my mom's house, she will send me to an elderly person's house, and, you know, drive up there and see if they need you to go anywhere, if they need to run an errand, you know, go up there and see if they need an errand run. So it was always, you know, being mindful of who's around you and who community is, and to look after and take care of community. That was always a big thing.
You know, as I listen to you talk about her, so much of the advice that she imparted, but also just how she lived her life. So whether she was giving that advice by speaking it, or whether she was giving that advice by living it and leading by example, it feels like you can understand how people in her generation got through the time that she came up in, right, which was Jim Crow mm-hmm. South. So much of what you're saying could be applied to today,
mm-hmm.
right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, just love through it, living life in a meditative, purposeful way,
mm-hmm.
Serving, giving where you can, how you can. What do you feel
mm-hmm.
like she, do you feel like, given the situation that we're in today in our current society, do you feel like she'd do anything different? What advice would she be doling out now? Well, and
no,
what advice do you feel like comes to you in her ancestral form?
I feel very strongly that she wouldn't do anything different, and I feel like it's important. I look at the work that I can do now with what's going on in the world. I'm so drawn, and I'm so much of a believer in building these communities where we bring our gifts and our talents and our skills and our love for one another to these communities, and to care for each other. I think that is what it's coming down to, you know, because there's so much separateness and divide, and we're taught that, and we're trained to separate ourselves from one another and to divide. And I strongly feel that. I'm not sure how well we're going to do with that system. And so when I look at what I was taught about going back to the land and to pulling up water from a well and living off the land and looking out for one another, and you know, we all throwing our talents and skills in a pot and saying, you know, what do we need? Who needs this and who needs this and who needs this? And looking out for one another, I really do believe that is the society that's going to save us.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to save us. That real
mm-hmm.
outpour of radical love, that love of giving up, hoarding and collecting and thinking of ourselves and how much we can gather for ourselves, and ours, our family, you know, and start looking at family as being a community, you know, and looking through and spending less, and that's what I'm saying, spending less time on fighting the resistance, you know, and how I can show how much I disapprove of what's going on. And that's where I am right now is in light of everything that's happening, you know, and how much I disapprove of a lot, is realizing that in all this movement, it's important to be still. It's important to be centered and to remember love, you know, in the midst of all this hate that is circulating, you know, and you hear stories and you look at Facebook and you see all the stories and you can't believe this happened to this person and somebody said this to that person, and it's so easy to get caught up in all that. And I think about the work, the real work is finding our tribe and finding those communities of people that say, no matter what, we have to get through this together. We have to love one another enough to look after one another and not think that we're in this by ourselves. So, you know, if I have a need, will you be there? And if you have a need, I'll be there. And so that, I think staying focused on that is what's gonna carry us through. I really do. I think we're just being asked to love radically. We're being asked to be that love. Love, I don't think, is in the church and inside the four walls. And love is I can talk about this forever because it bothers me so much how we are asked to look at love and protest and resistance the way exactly how as people have come to me with Martin Luther King, you know, and they want to say, well, you know, King didn't do this and King didn't do that, and that we should respond the way that it makes other people, makes white people comfortable, and how we should respond. But I look at love looking more radical, like even more radical, in that giving ourselves that voice and that importance, and just important enough to say, I'm going to do this for my neighbor because I love them. I'm going to do this for my neighbor because I care. I'm going to do this. I'm gonna, even if it means I'm doing it by myself, but saying no. And I think we've gotten away from that, saying no and being vocal and standing out saying, you know, recognizing our privilege enough to say, I don't want it if they can't have it, you know, I just think we're being asked to find a more radical form of love, other than just being still, being sitting, other than sitting down. I think it's time to do something. We must be love in action. Protest. I'm all for peaceful protest. All for peaceful protest. But I don't think that's everything.
Right.
I don't think that's everything.
Like what are you doing within the community? What are you doing at home? What are you doing with the people on your block? What are you doing
absolutely.
With the people at school? What are you, yeah.
Yes. We have to do more. And I think that doing more is saying to one another, hey, you don't have to, like, feel like this is the only way. Like, there's another way, and it's over here in this community. Over here, we do things this way. We look after each other in this way. You don't have to, like, feel like you're in this alone. You don't have to feel like you're under a system that you know, works to keep you part of the system, to keep you silent, where you have to be silent in order to feel that, you know, you can get some help or that you have assistance, you know. I think giving rise to our voices and one another's voices and realizing that we are more powerful than we ever imagined, and that anyone ever wanted us to know, we're more powerful than that. And we have our ancestors to thank for that.
Well, speaking of that, my last question to you, thinking about Big Mama Crank, and thank you for her story, because it actually brought tears to my eyes, you know, just thinking about hearing your love for her and your profound appreciation for who she was, mm-hmm. what she brought to your family, what she brought to your childhood, what she brought to the community. What's a favorite story that you have that she shared with you in all that time? You know, like you, I grew up with my great-grandmother and my grandmother, and their stories are just invaluable, and I wonder if there's a story that kind of comes to mind for you that used to make her tell you, or that you will never forget when she told you. What's one of your favorite stories about her?
I don't have a story. As much as a song, I'm a musician, so I like to, I like to catch her singing. And well, I mean, I'm not gonna sing it right now, but what I'm saying was, I would catch my grandmother singing, "Mary, don't you weep," you know, mm-hmm. "Tell Martha not to moan," and she would, I would catch her, you know, she would be in the kitchen cleaning her teeth or something, and you know, I would creep in and I would hear, you know, just close enough to hear what she was mumbling or what she was saying, and she would be singing, you know, that song. And mm-hmm. I remember that. I miss that. And I remember just stopping and even as a kid and thinking, wow, like just wow, you know. So yeah, it would be through song, and it would be that song.
What was the wow for you? I love that song, by the way. I love that
the
song.
Wow?
Yeah, what was the wow?
The wow was that, like, I got a story one time, and it goes back to the wow of, like, the wow is when you see her laugh or sing or just be, like, she was always so serious. She was always so serious in the business. Always so serious in the business. In her cooking, in her planning, and it wasn't verbal. It was when she got up to move and take action, you was my mother and Uncle Son, everyone would pay attention to her to see what is it time to do next. What is she doing? And then everybody would next thing you hear was Mama say, "Angel, come in here and do such and such." You know, and she would call my brothers, "Come in here and do such and such." So once you see what she was doing, then it was, okay, so everybody's going to do this now. Everybody's going to take on and assist. Mm-hmm. But it was never this announcement, "I'm going to go do something." And so she was just so much in that mode that when you actually saw her laugh or sing or just, that would really throw you. But so now I have two things now that you think about it. I remember one time where I was reading the Sunday paper, and I was sitting in a chair next to her. She was sitting in her chair, and it was quiet, and I was flipping through, and she asked me to stop. And she said, "I want that right there. Cut that out for me." And I said, "What, Big Mama?" And she was pointing to the crossword puzzle. And I said, "Big Mama, you do crossword puzzles?" And she said, "No, child." She said, "I keep them." And she showed me where she had cut out crossword puzzles from different newspapers. I don't know where she got the newspapers, but she had cut out crossword puzzles, and she was saving them. And I said, "Big Mama, so why do you want the crossword puzzles?" And she said, "They're messages in there." And I didn't realize till later in my life. I went to Guilford College in Greensboro, and it was one of the sites along the Underground Railroad. And I heard a story when I was in college, my first year, about how this the slaves would the Quakers would have the messages in quilts.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I remember it my first, plain as day, my first year in college. I realized that Big Mama was referring to the messages that slaves would receive through these quilts. And she felt that she said that they shows you how to quilt a blanket, how to design the blanket for the messages. And I realized in college what she meant, that she was referring to possibly stories that she had heard about quilts having messages, and that she felt that that was a way, the newspaper, putting it in the newspaper was a way of getting that message out there and getting that message on a quilt. And so she would save those. And I thought, wow. Wow, yeah, that was like, I remember just thinking, whoa. That's the story I'll share.
It was like those moments where she was doing basically something more than surviving. Like it was laughing and song and times where she had joy.
Oh, yeah, she had joy. She shared one time where, now I don't know why my brother did this, but she shared with me, because she pulled me in from play to share this with me. She said that she was walking in the house, and she, like I said, she likes to lean on things. So she went to lean on one of the chairs, and she missed the chair, and she fell. And my brother, who's younger than me, laughed. And I remember her telling me that, and feeling like, oh, my God, I can't believe, like, you fell, but I can't believe you laughed. And she said, that's all right. And she said, he was out here climbing a tree, and he didn't think anybody saw him. And she said he fell out that tree and looked around, and she was inside the screen porch, and she said, I just laughed. And just knowing that she was laughing, that she had, you know, that made me laugh. So I remember that story. I remember going to our brother saying, I can't believe you laughed, you know, when she fell. You know, he said it was funny. He said, why? It was funny. So,
thank you so much for letting me interview you about Willie Mae Crank, a.k.a. Big Mama.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me talk about her and remember and revisit how beautiful she is, and, you know, how much she's still with me. So thank you.
She is. She's definitely clearly in you, speaking to us collectively. I feel her. So thank you for bringing her into my life.
Thank you. I enjoy calling her into spaces that, you know, can appreciate.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So thank you.